I speak to them of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. What does the world look like when seen through the eyes of Jesus Christ? That's the question I led with last Sunday, both in response to the healing of Bartimaeus and responding to the horror of the Tree of Life shooting in Pittsburgh. I speculated that it would look something like a world full of possibility, the possibility of radical witness, of radical transformation, of social change, of the dreams of idealists becoming reality. But becoming a believer in this possibility hinges on believing that the mission of Jesus Christ, as proclaimed in a synagogue at Nazareth so many years ago, is not a fool's errand. Good news to the poor, release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, freedom for the oppressed. And though preaching is a rhetorical action of my proclamation to you, the truth is that I preach to myself as well. And last week's sermon was one that I needed to hear, because sometimes I really do doubt that Jesus' mission is worth pursuing any longer. But thank God for days like today, when we celebrate the lives of the saints, whom our prayer book calls the chosen vessels of God's grace and the lights of the world in their generations. Because when I'm down, when my faith begins to falter, when I see the pain of the world and I wonder aloud, is there any hope? I look at the lives of the saints and am reminded that people before have asked this very same question, and they answered with a resounding yes. And because of their yes to the mission of Jesus and the challenges of the world, our world is a better place for it. And so today, on this, the Sunday where we keep the Feast of All Saints, it seems right to focus on a few of those saints. And because, well, the lives of male saints vastly overpopulate our calendar of saints, I bring before us three women across several generations who offer us a vision of what radical witness in the face of the world's horror might look like. I want to tell you of the glories of Perpetua. Born in the year 181, Perpetua was a young widow and a mother to an infant in an era where the persecution of Christians was all too common. But she didn't fear the cost of dedicating her life to Jesus Christ, and so she and the other members of her household, including her slave Felicity, began the catechumenal process, the process of becoming educated in the faith as a precursor to baptism. And it was around this time that the Emperor Septimius Severus issued a decree requiring all of his subjects to make a sacrificial offering to his divinity. I mean, she was a Roman citizen, so she would have been subject to this decree, but history tells us that she privileged her burgeoning Christian identity over and against her citizenship. She had found a home on a different shore, and even in the face of imprisonment and death, she refused to make the sacrifice, which really was only burning a little incense at an idol. You know, it wasn't that hard to do. But for her, it was beyond the pale. And so along with her companions, her household, her slaves, she was arrested and placed in the most wretched prison. Even when her father came to visit her, pleading for her to renounce this new faith and make the imperial sacrifice, she refused. "I am a Christian," she said, and she meant to die as one, just as she had learned to live as one. Her persecution was harrowing. She was placed with her friends in an arena filled with a leopard, a boar, a bear, and a savage cow. And it was the cow that first mangled her body, tossing her into the air, trampling her. But it didn't kill her. And even when she was being trampled, she cried aloud, "Nevertheless, stand fast in the faith and love one another. And do not let what we suffer be a stumbling block to you." She was eventually killed by the sword of a soldier, piercing her throat, even as her heart remained burning with the flames of devotion. The legends tell us that his first blow missed, and she guided the sword into her throat to help the man out. She teaches us that nothing should supplant our identities in Christ, even our national citizenship, especially when such citizenship demands that we live in a manner contrary to the witness of Jesus. I want to turn to the wonder working of Catherine of Siena, born in 1347, the youngest of 25 children. My God. Her strong devotion to Jesus began when she was six. She was walking home with her brother from visiting one of their older sisters, and she had a vision that profoundly shaped her life. She gazed upward. She didn't pay any mind to anything except what she saw in her vision. From then on, she dedicated herself to prayer, to meditation, and devotion. And as you might imagine, her intense religiosity put her at odds with her family. They planned to marry her off, as people did, right? They got some, I mean, when you have 25 kids, you need some money. Right? So they planned to marry her off, and she took scissors to her hair to protest her family's obsession with her beauty as a means of attracting a husband. Her family, they were wealthy dyers and had ample resources, which Catherine would take and distribute to the poor without asking her parents first. I think precocious doesn't begin to describe her. Even at this young age, she saw her devotion as being intimately linked with what we might call social action. She eventually moved from her parents' home and was accepted into the Dominican order. Her mystical experiences continued, but so too did her action outside of her cell. She found her vocation amongst the Dominicans as a nurse, but in contrast to the others within her order, she regularly sought out the people with leprosy and visible cancer, and she offered them the treatment and love and affection that was denied to them by the wider society. She was a burden to ineffective priests, and there are stories of how when priests would see Catherine and her friends coming to their doorstep, they would shut the door so she couldn't come in and bother them about how faithful or not they were living to the Lord. I do not invite you to do that to me. Later in her ministry, when a severe plague came upon the land, she set aside care for her own self and she tended the wounds of the most vulnerable and suffering. This is somebody who has profound mystical experiences, and you would get the sense that she is trapped in her cell all day long talking to Jesus, but that wasn't the case. She wasn't blind to the world because of her devotion. Really, it was her deep spirituality that compelled her to see the wounds of the world and respond with healing grace and generosity. It was as if she had this crazy idea that to be truly devoted to Jesus, truly spiritually connected to him, you had to find yourself in the world, ministering to its pain and its brokenness. She died at the age of 33. And her last words were, "Father, into your hands I commend my soul and my spirit." Now I want to sing songs of praise for Sojourner Truth, the Miriam of the later Exodus. She was born around 1798, and she was given the name Isabella. Just Isabella, because she was a slave. And her name changed based upon whoever owned her. For nearly 30 years, she lived as a slave, but eventually she escaped to Philadelphia. At some point in her life, she made the decision to follow Jesus. And when she went to worship at St. George's Episcopal Church in Philadelphia, she was turned away. She couldn't worship with the white folk. She moved into New York and joined Mother Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church. And I must say, I think that was our church's loss. She preached on the street in some of the poorest neighborhoods in New York. But during her time as a preacher, she recognized that the spiritual graces she spoke of needed to be complemented by ministry to the bodies of the hearers as well. And She turned her time and attention to creating a homeless shelter for women, providing food and warm clothing that would shield their bodies from the brutality of life on snow-covered streets. But God wasn't done with her yet. She was 46, and she heard God say, "Go east." And so she went east, first to Long Island, and then found her way into Connecticut. And she stopped at the farm of some Quakers for some water, and they asked her name. She said her name was Sojourner. And when pressed for her last name, she decided that she just didn't want to claim any of the names of her masters. And so she said, "The only master I have now is God, and his name is Truth." She arrived at the farm as Isabella and left that day as Sojourner Truth. At 6 feet tall, she cut an imposing figure. And soon she became a source of fascination for white Christians everywhere she traveled. She couldn't read or write, but her mind was sharp. Sharp enough to memorize huge sections of the Bible which anchored her preaching. And much like her street preaching led her to work with the homeless, her travels into predominantly white circles led her to begin preaching about abolition and the women's rights movement. She's most famous for a speech she gave in Ohio called "Ain't I a Woman?" It was at a women's rights conference, and she first had to listen for hours to clergy attacking gender equality and the abolitionist movement. This kind of reads like present-day life, it sounds like. Like many Christians on the wrong side of history, she had to listen to them turn the holy book into a horror book as they supported perversions of justice. Women are weak. Those with dark skin were made to be subservient, they said. Being both, Sojourner decided that she had heard enough. And in her own words, she pointed at a priest and said, "That little man in black there, he says women can't have as much rights as men because Christ wasn't a woman. Where did your Christ come from? Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, these women together ought to be able to turn it back and get it right side up again. And now they is asking to do it, the men just better let them." She died a hero of both the abolitionist movement and the women's rights movement. And we would do well to heed her wisdom. Across time and space, these three women were rooted in something that transcends their differences. They spoke truth to power, life into situations of death and despair, and they did it because they were followers of Jesus. The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." These women weren't content to let stories like this one be toothless accounts of something that happened in the past. They became Jesus in their time and place. They summoned their own Lazaruses from the grave and they unbound the dead in their midst. Perpetua refused to let fear and nationalism rule her heart. She called steadfastness from the grave, and even though she died, she and the others that followed her live on in eternal memory. Catherine understood that mystical devotion must be coupled with social action. She summoned from the grave all those that the world saw fit to toss away like garbage. Sojourner used her voice to speak on behalf of those who had no voice, even when she herself shouldn't have been heard by those around her in the first place. She summoned from the grave all the women and the slaves who had come to believe that hope was dead. "Unbind him and let him go." That was their story, and that was their song, to steal from that old hymn. And it's ours too. let's be honest. We are kidding ourselves if we become convinced that nothing can be done about the horrors of the world. With examples like these women, if these three women were the only three women in our calendar of saints, strong and brave in the face of darkness and evil, we still would have no recourse to doubt, despair, and inaction. Unless, of course, we simply don't want to do anything about the state of the world. You know, we didn't sing it today, but from time to time we sing for all the saints who from their labors rest. But, you know, by God, these women did not rest while they were in this world. They fought and they spoke and they preached and they testified and they sacrificed their bodies and souls so that the world could catch a glimpse of what it could be. They modeled for us what a life set ablaze by Jesus Christ can look like. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, these women together ought to be able to turn it back and get it right side up again. And we are a church that celebrates the diversity of opinions and skin colors and gender identities and sexuality, and the list goes on. With the strength of this plethora of voices, perspectives, and gifts, there should be nothing that stops us from putting the world right side up again. And you know, I gotta say this. I'm content to step out of the way as a white man who has enjoyed lots of privilege in my life. Too many people who look like me and sound like me think they have all the right answers. And if history tells us anything, it tells us people who look and sound like me have done a pretty good job of turning the world upside down. I think it's going to be some modern Perpetuas and Catherines and Sojourners who will be the ones to turn it right side up. Life is a hard battle anyway, said Sojourner. If we laugh and sing a little as we fight the good fight of freedom, it makes it all go easier. I will not allow my life's light to be determined by the darkness around me.